Spectral Dreams, an excerpt from the novel Wereworlds. Roberta Burt Davis. The Starship Vernacular cruised through the depths of hyperspace, stealth mode on standby, ready to endure the turbulent winds of war yet again. A grand warship, she outshined and outlived most of her fleet with her passage through more battles, honors, and war scars hardly spoken of, for only few knew the whispers of memories. Since her captain, Dr. Scruffy Scroofius, salvaged her from the boneyard ages ago, he fawned not over appearances, but poured all his heart and vitriol into her, dedicating upgrades and innovations from his band of ever-tinkering research peers. The crew maintaining her upheld a proud yet hushed status that this ship now bore, the clashing missions of combat and diplomacy. Since the Allied warship Jacobite had been hijacked a slim week ago and was still missing, the Vernacular now flew as flagship for the Atlian Chancellor, Captain Slade. The Vernacular's ready room, historically used by crews and fighter pilots, seldom hosted dignitaries, so instead of primp and polish, the walls held memorabilia from scattered worlds for memory or humor, not bravado or clout. Along her port wall, large active screens and oblong tables both served as hologram projectors. Captain Slade trudged into the command room of Scruffy's ship, turned on the lights, then powered up the projectors. He wore a robe and bedraggled sweatpants, and his pointy ears poked up through his bedhead of ocean blue hair. Slade dropped into the central chair, dug a handful of memory chips from a pocket, and poked them into ports at the table's control panel. "Start space station reports. Put on standby," he said. Holograms rose up to a few feet high all across the table, depicting a cutaway view of a space station resembling a network of linked domes. He'd watched this station built over years by his people, allies, and humans. Now the holograms showed fresh battle scars throughout the resilient structure, and the wall screens displayed lists of casualties, reports, and renovation plans. Slade flinched at the sight, and his eyes narrowed to match his scowl. What angered him nearly as much as losing his ship and his crew being injured or missing was that his foggy memories of that night were only beginning to clear over the past week. "Play the new Oasis spaceport attack. Begin with my patrol recording of the New Year's party." Slade had walked among the mishmash of inhabitants, his demeanor carefree, far belying the tension in his body. He'd spent the evening chatting more than usual, analyzing the emotions of everyone from officials to civilians, and trying to analyze why he felt so protective. Slade was glad he'd followed a hunch and recorded holo videos just before the attack. The first holo vid began playing on the center screen, as seen through Slade's eyes on that fated night. As the space station's images reformed to their shiny, newly built vision, Slade wished he could turn back time so easily. The hologram show began as he'd recorded from strolling through the decks just 1 week ago. New Oasis space station sizzled with activity from humans and their allies. Most of the visiting off-worlders appeared nearly human, except for the odd coppery hue to their skin and characteristically multi-toned hair, often mistaken for punk hair dyes. These were the telepaths from Atlian, the planet also home to over 20,000 human colonists. A handful of Draelith cats also attended, a humanoid feline allied race bearing claws and furred bodies. The aquatics from Atlian had various tints of green to their skin, leafy ears, skin as earthy as tree bark, and thick, seaweed-colored hair. Earth people were finally proving that they could coexist and even thrive with distant species. Slade had sported new emblems of Chancellor on his bomber-style jacket that night, and a fleet patch over the heart of two worlds joined in alliance, Earth and his homeworld, Atlian. He'd grudgingly added the pins of a High Council Chancellor to his collar and shrugged off jibes about his less-than-formal attire from friends and crew. Still, something just felt wrong on this night, so he moved on, cursing under his breath all the more for not enjoying the event. Everything struck him as bad omens on this festive night, making Slade feel he'd be luckier chasing poltergeists than trying to find clues. Nobody else acted concerned. Excited patrons mingled in bars and dance halls, many exploring the Legacy Museum with holographic historical images of vintage-year spacecraft from the 20th century. People wore party hats and other novelties, many glittering the year 2257. Vendors hustled in their open mall aisle, selling virtually everything from spaceship toys to shot glasses, shirts, and gadgets. Slade passed the main party hall and nodded respectfully to his closest cohorts, Dr. Scruffy Scroofius and Lady Aussie Astoria. He remembered admiring her long red party gown, a shimmering garment that complemented the shimmery red streaks in her coppery hair. Such a sight normally disrupted his ability to think straight, but he resisted her erotic grace. Aussie gestured for him and gave that impatient look. Slade just couldn't shake his native hunter instincts. He shook his head and blew her a kiss. Aussie's gaze turned contemplative as Slade left her and Scruffy to handle their distinguished guests. Slade was glad he'd copied records from space station security as he tapped the holovid controls and started scene two, the ceremony. Scruffy and Aussie's images appeared floating above the table, surrounded by a grand hall packed with cheery people gathered around the main podium. Scruffy leaned back in the captain's chair in the vernacular's cockpit, his feet up on the co-pilot's seat as he watched the stars go by in their hypnotizing manner. Barely shifting from his comfortable position, he reached over, tapped the help controls, and double-checked the autopilot. All systems, scanners, anything to stay awake. He found no sign of pursuing ships, no anomalies nor malfunctions. "I know Venomir's out there. What's he up to if not hounding us?" Scruffy tried to resume his mental comfort zone, then rose with a long yawn and a slow stretch. "Bah, too quiet for me. I better wake up Slade for the next shift, but I bet he's at it again, studying that rotten space station attack." His gaze drifted to the endless starscape ahead, unable to help pondering the events when he gave his speech on New Year's Eve. The evening had started out so much to his pleasures. Ladies, wine, rock and roll, reciprocity of species working together. Dr. Scroofius well surpassed Slade's years by an Earth century and finally looked old, like a human nearing senior years. As usual, human women gravitated toward his mythical image and pointed ears, especially noticing the ear with an intricately carved silver and jade cap contoured over the top half. Scruffy, who dressed barely formal enough for any occasion, refused to match his socks and wore an open sports jacket and a faded forest green shirt patterned with vines. Young humans often asked if he made toys, or was half plant due to his crazy green hair. More than one person had asked him if he was the Green Knight, to which he simply agreed with a fanciful smile. Scruffy ended a dance with two elegant ladies with a bow and kiss to each of their hands. "I'd best earn my keep," he said. "Enjoy the eve." He picked up his wine glass and left the dance floor, heading toward the podium. Activating his mic, he trotted up the steps to center stage. "Ladies and gents, shall we begin? I know we're all eager to start the real partying." He looked toward the stage. "Wolver?" On the next stage over, The rock band leader Wolver nodded. He silenced the strings on his double-necked guitar mandola, and his band followed suit. A pointy-eared Atlian who spoke English with a European accent, he wore an odd mix of black jeans and leather pagan style. Wolver gave Scruffy a classy introduction in a voice of genuine reverie. "Ladies and gents, I give to you our favorite eccentric ambassador of science, wiser than wise, professor and doctor of neurobotanical medicine, Dr. Scroofius. We call him Scruffy, with respect." Scruffy gave the crowd a hopeful smile and began, "Thank you and welcome. Whether we roam from across the stars to home shores, certain puzzles remain. I'm with you tonight because from this night on, many of your questions will be answered. Yes, we have visited Earth since the Dark Ages. Well, not only me," he said and chuckled. "I'm not that ancient." Wolver made a few fake coughs into the mic. Scruffy scolded him on cue. "Quiet, you pup. I'm only older than barnacles. So let's see. What are the most popular questions? We do not brain blast people, and we're not constantly reading everyone's minds. That takes far too much effort. It's enough concentration to psi-chat with one telepath. Ah, what else?" Scruffy picked up a pair of glittery, fake Martian antennas from the podium. "Most aliens will not have these unless they are insectoid." He gave them a shake and stuck them on his head, drawing more smirks and chuckles. He glanced over at Aussie, who shook her head with a satiric sigh. Scruffy flicked the little antennae, making it wiggle and shed sparkles.
"Stylish, though. So, why Earth? We started out just wanting to observe, really, but oh boy, let someone get too friendly with the farmer's daughter, or one lucky shot hits a morpher and bam, it's on." Scruffy threw up his arms. "Next thing you know, there's mythology explosions, angry mobs, and silver bullets." He took off his antennas and handed them, with a grandfatherly smile, to a blonde little girl sitting atop her father's shoulders.
"Thanks," the girl said in a brassy voice.
Scruffy gave her a playful wave and continued, "By the way, those silver bullets don't kill us because they're silver, but they're still scary." Scruffy faked a brief cower. "Oh, look, I'm about to be clobbered, but that ammo sure is pretty. Hey, can you shotgun me with some rubies, too? I'll look like a pop star." Scruffy grinned and sat down on the edge of the stage as the crowd's scattered chuckles fed his mirth. "I must insist that we were not the only species to visit Earth. Those little gray guys, be careful. They have a saying that goes, 'Remember Roswell,' but luckily, they're not very compatible with your people." He noticed a slew of mixed reactions, from concerned looks to a few huffs of disbelief from his audience. "What? I'm serious." He tuned in to a rugged-looking man who was muttering to his buddy. "Yes, my good fellow, I read minds, but my old ears heard you. You're right, some of us morph, I mean, shape change from way back when. We had to be good infiltrators during the Renaissance days. Still, we made too much impact upon your mythology, but what the heck, sometimes it was fun. On the bright side, humans are living older and healthier, and so the number of hybrids between our species grows. Our worlds are evolving, our people changing at inspiring rates. Is the conundrum crisis or riddle? Obstacle or breakthrough? One thing is sure. Due to our mixed blood, we are, in essence, were-worlds." Scruffy paused to study his attentive students and friends scattered throughout the crowd. He could see their mixed emotions, but the New Year's spirit energized the crowd with good vibes. Only one person was missing. Slade.
Scruffy looked over at his dignified Atlean lady friend across the room and raised his fuzzy eyebrows. She frowned, made flying gesture with her fingers, and shrugged. Scruffy masked his frustration, and with cool composure, he addressed the audience again. At midnight, we'll open our docks to intragalactic species on the first star-class multi-terrestrial space station allied with Earth. Scruffy raised his half-full wine glass. A toast to our human counterparts, longtime hosts to my people. I think we should have celebrated this on Hallow's Eve, then we could have worn each other's get-ups. Scattered laughter rewarded his comedy. It's nearly midnight. Party on. He smiled as they toasted, cheered, and applauded, and Wolver's band fired up old rock songs, but Scruffy's jovial demeanor faded once his back was turned. A faint, bitter scent drifted into the room, making people look around. A few seconds later, the lights flickered. Then, from all around, high-pitched zaps from blaster fire pierced the air and burned into guards, followed by thuds and clattering, then the rhythmic, heavy thumps of approaching boots. The party hall fell silent in the briefest instant of shock. Then voices of mayhem erupted from the crowd. The hollow images swirled into twisted colors, then faded to nothing but gnarled memories. Shaking his head, Slade grumbled, "Even Scruffy's team didn't have any warning. How rare." He tapped the continue key and said, "Attacks by Venomir. Play all." All the screens in the room and on the table formed imagery in chronological order. The far left screen showed a much younger, faintly elfin-featured Slade and the aquatic, green-skinned Venomir sharing a cockpit as young men. The central screen displaying heated scenes of Venomir ripping off his insignia and ranting at the High Council, spouting claims that humans were not ready for their aid, telepathic bloodlines were endangered from such an alliance, and ultimately causing a massive brawl among elite diplomats and bodyguards. During the chaos, Venomir made his escape. Ghostly flames erupted across the long oval table, sparked by starship and fighter battles over land and sea. Slade kept his gaze fixed on one ship in particular, eyes fixed upon the documentary of a battered warship that lay in wreckage along the coastline. "Venomir," Slade muttered. "You were the best we had. Why did you turn?" His voice cut short when a wave of pain engulfed his senses. He thought expecting it might help, but it never did. "Oh, here we go," he groaned, more from exasperation than anything else, clamping fingers over his temples. He knew what was next. Those damned flashbacks yanked him back in time. Sensations of smoke stung his eyes, the sharp stench of fire consuming his beloved ship. A barrage of warship alarms blared over tense voices of his crew trying to regain control. Even as the ship went down, only death made them stop. How those images had haunted his soul, twisted his dreams, taken years to push to the back of his mind, yet each time he tried to use his telepathy or even think of that part of his past, the flashback clawed at his conscious mind. Seconds felt like days, weeks. He didn't know how long he spent among ghosts from the past before his mind struggled back to the present. Slade found himself with his forehead resting on folded arms, his heart racing, body sweating. He looked up to see those fiery videos of the past still surrounding him. He clenched his fists a few times to steady his hands, then reached down to the table's control panel and punched eject. The memory chips slid out from their ports, and the carnage scattered across hologram projectors vanished. He felt foolish trapping himself in this scenario each night, but every time he repeated this sick self-experiment, a few memories cleared up. He didn't know how else to regain them, but he knew one thing. He was sick of this method. Slade rubbed at the stubble on his chin. "What am I missing? There must be a better way," he murmured. He allowed his weary eyes to drift closed for only a moment. His churning mind conjured the past again, hazy images smudged together with the illogical meshing of a crazed artist's paints. He saw smoke envelop all sources of light until his recurring nightmare barraged his mind with the havoc of a crashing ship full of scared yet stern voices calling out to put out fires and fend off intruders. Slade saw his old friend Scruffy in the form of a black and silver wolfish creature howling at him through a haze of smoke and red blinking lights. Streaks of energy blasts flashed through the sky, fueling eruptions of shattered, half-melted metallic skin from his ship. His ship trembled and jolted from turbulence and enemy blasts from a foe determined to stalk him for life. "Venomir," Slade yelled, "you power-crazed freak! You want my ship? I'll splatter you across her decks and feed you to your own fish-faced relatives." Slade growled as he reached through ghostly images of lapping flames at a green-skinned humanoid. Venomir spread his arms, smiling, daring him. The flames only tingled, making him wonder if he was alive or in another reality. Lights faded to black, leaving him in an abandoned corridor with only smoke and chunks of still smoldering debris. The next blast showered him with sparks and flung him against the opposite wall. Slade jolted upright from where he'd drifted off to sleep in the chair. He slapped his hands on the table and rose. All these attacks, why can't I see a correlation with that insane crash? What has Venomir done to my head? He turned the multiple hologram projectors off and stalked out of the room, hands stuffed in his robe pockets. He tried to forget the voices of war and instead focus on the soothing sounds of Scruffy's ship, her steady thrum of engines and routine ship systems, faint snoring, and footsteps of an old friend. "Here comes my butt chewing," Slade thought. "Scruffy, go back to sleep." Scruffy stopped him in the hall, the old man's wrinkled brow even more furrowed than it usually was, right before giving a scolding. "Do you plan to stay up every night refreshing that war inside your head?" Slade brushed past. "Until I figure it out, yes." Scruffy raised a finger to shake it. "Listen," he started, but Slade waved him off in a manner firmer each passing night, and they had already used up their favorite verbal jousts argue lines over the days of space travel. Scruffy heaved a sigh and shrugged. "Fine. You're sure Venomir will come to us?" "Naturally. He thrills for a hunt, and he revived these flashbacks for a reason. I know he's enduring them as well. I believe he needs to be rid of them, just as I do." Slade halted, a shrewd grin curving his lips. "Besides, we have his niece." "Yeah," Scruffy agreed and shoved him in the shoulder. "So will you let one night go by without summoning flashbacks of that old ship?" Slade halted, his expression blank. Then it slowly twisted from pondering to something that resembled anger from his seething eyes. "That old ship. That's it." "Aw, don't get all furballed," Scruffy said, turning. "No, Scruffy," Slade's voice kept rising as he realized. "I mean, that's it. Venomir's not just after my ship. The Jacobite, she's a tool. Of course he wanted my ship back. He used to captain her, but it's deeper than that. Remember what Shanto said about finding the beginning with the end? You're a genius." "Oh," Scruffy started. "You don't mean—"
Slade grabbed Scruffy by the shoulders and gave him a shake.
"Damn straight, you old cuss."
He lowered his voice, too late, for they heard shuffling from their waking crew. "I know where he's going." This story is from The Moving Finger Writes, the September 2013 anthology published by the Sacramento Suburban Writers Club.